Hi, my name is Jonette Gay, and I'm the pastor of Otterbein United Methodist Church, and we are starting a new podcast. I have with me today our media specialist.
Hi, Jason Burgess.
And we want to talk and we want to listen. Our faith is seen and understood in many topics. We're glad you've tuned in today to Hey Hey, anybody listening? I'm so glad to be here. I'm Jonette Gay, and I'm here with Connie Brown, which is such a privilege. Connie, I think it's kind of fun that we're in your husband's old office when he was pastor here so many years ago. And what year did Alan die? Was it?
He died in April of 2009.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he left to another church. What year did you two leave?
We were here from 1964, just as he came out of seminary. He was assigned here as an assistant pastor. And then by about 3 years later, he and Bob Zimmerman became co-pastors when Dr. Fagley retired. And they worked together until 1987 when district superintendent thought it would be a good idea to have Alan move to Westchester and serve Grove Church down there. And then he totally retired in 2001.
Mm-hmm. Well, Connie, I call him the omnipresence because they talk about this as Alan's office and he left in 1988 and he's still around in their hearts. So they never got over that he left. But your whole family was beloved here at Otterbein. And I just wanted to have this time in our podcast because you have quite a story with your children. I know you're very proud of a daughter who is a pastor and a son who is, what is his official title?
He is head of Homeland Security. There are 8 offices in the state of Arizona. He's oversees all of those and works out of the Phoenix office. So he has done a lot of moving to many different places, but they've been in Phoenix now about 10 years.
Wow. Well, as a grandmother, I am amazed at your story because when we talk about LGBTQIA, that's not just a theory or an issue for you. You've got skin in the game. And I was hoping you could tell me.
That's exactly the term that I've used with it because a little backstory. Over the years, I grew up in a household where our father had died by age 40, and our mother was struggling to raise the three of us on very low income. We had many moves, and one of those happened to take us to Pembroke, which is a suburb of Harrisburg, and we started attending a small Evangelical United Brethren Church there. The pastor was Harold Snyder, who was a young man who was also relatively new, having not long ago been ordained and stepped into the pastoring. And he was a wonderful pastor, much like Jonette, very compassionate, very intelligent sermons, and congregation was very, very helpful with each other and including with our family, which did such things as help me have funding to go to a church camp one summer. A man appeared at our door one day with a baseball mitt so my brother could play on a kid's team, just dear things like that, and many more. In fact, there was a couple who would come by each Sunday morning and route from their house and pick us up to transport mother and the three of us to church. And those good things. But as I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to go to Lebanon Valley College, one day, as my stepfather, who had just become my stepfather a few months before mother died too, and she was only 47, he said, guess what is happening in our community. If the word is out, the Reverend Snyder is gay. And I said, what's gay? New term for me. And I was so concerned because Reverend Snyder had been so caring and wonderful and helpful with mother helping her find jobs, and the many, many inspirations that he gave to our family and the fine way that he treated his wife and their little boy. But obviously he had been wrestling with his identity for many, many years. And the person who was mayor of Harrisburg at the time, a man, and apparently some other leaders in the community had become known as being gay, and he had kind of become part of that group. And so changes began to come there. And when I called him and asked if I could come to visit him, he said yes, and Alan and I went to visit. Alan and I had started dating in high school, and now, you know, both in college. Go to visit Pastor Snyder, and he welcomes us into the house. But you could see that he was really depressed and struggling in the situation, because things going around in the community were gay, but also men from the congregation were heard to be saying, well, I'm not going to go hunting with him anymore. They'd done it for years. Nothing had changed, you know, except a label, you know. And so that, you know, that was my sad introduction to, different sexual identities. And then as Alan began his years of ministry, even here, right here, someone came to him to explain that her son, who sang in a well-known choral group in New York City, had been identified as having AIDS. And this was still in the late 60s or early 70s. And of course, there was this terrible stigma about it. And instead of rejecting her, Alan said, well, of course, you may have him brought back here and we'll do memorial service for him and so on. So out of that, and then gradually other things, as he took additional courses in counseling, it kind of became known that he did that. And he began to find an assortment of people coming to him. I don't know many of the stories, but every once in a while, pastors need someone with whom to, you know, just unload issues. And I heard a little bit, but of course, never talked to other people about it. Gradually, Alan, I remember one time saying, you know, it's just a matter of mechanics. You know, they're still people and worthy of love. And gradually, it became known that a very active man in the congregation, Earl Kuster, was married to a delightful woman. They seemed to have a good marriage, but obviously his identity was becoming more of an issue for him. And they came and talked to Alan, and she said, you know, I am going to get a divorce, but I would like him to be able to stay in the church and to be treated well. And pastors, Pastor Bob, Pastor Alan, and other leaders helped to work that out. And Earl Kuster, I think, shifted from being a teacher of the third and fourth grade teaching team to being one in the fifth and sixth grade. One couple did come to him, as this was beginning to become news, and said, we think we need to leave because we don't want our child to be taught by a gay man. And Alan said, well, how old is your child now? And they said, I think 3 years of age. And they said, well, you know, how about we just give this a little time? And they did. And by the time the child was, getting into grade school and so on, they had become comfortable with the idea, and they were finding that
they evolved.
That Earl was a wonderful man and still was a wonderful man. And so it was the grace of his wife, the grace of the congregation and so on. He made a wonderfully important contribution here.
What a journey you've had.
Mm-hmm, we had. And when we went to Westchester, there were more of the journeys. Mm-hmm. And along the way, then our daughter and son grew up, and they began to get their employment. Andrea and Tim lost their first child to a miscarriage. And out of that, they got so much nurturing and support from Tim's Mennonite side of the family and Andrea's United Methodist side of the family that she decided that maybe the fact that her daddy had been telling her over the years, you know, you'd be a good pastor. She, oh, no, daddy, not me. Maybe daddy had a point there. So they lived close to Lancaster Seminary. And she,
I did not know the care she received when she had a miscarriage sort of pushed her into it. I didn't know that.
The church's nurture really made the difference, And, you know, and all of the loving care that she had received as a child here, too. Because among the wonderful caring here were things like early on in the three-year-olds, Edie Peters, and I'm blocking on the name of the other person, but two women would come around to visit the homes of each of the three-year-old children during the year that they were in that class. And yes, just lots and lots of other examples of loving, nurturing care for the children growing up. And then Scott, who's almost 4 years younger than Andrea, also met his eventual wife in college and at in Washington, D.C., American University. The oldest is Zoe, and she is a social worker now in Philadelphia. And the younger one is was Thea. But along the way, growing, all, nothing, seemed extremely unusual with either. And then Scott, who's almost 4 years younger than Andrea, also met his eventual wife in college and at in Washington, D.C., American University. And they have had many moves because of his work with federal law enforcement. They found that as their first child, who was Jacob, reached 13 years of age, he was becoming more and more depressed, very different for this kid who's been, so interested in life and music and many things. And they were beginning to notice it when they were living in D.C. for a time. And that became even, the depression became even more evident then, so they had the wisdom to contact Washington Children's Hospital. Kate was about 13, 14 years of age at that point. They took her for the appointment that they had to wait a while for, and the physicians worked with both the child and the parents, sometimes together, sometimes separately, and determined that indeed Kate was gay and began hormone therapy. Jen began going to I think Scott went to some of the sessions, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and she found that it wasn't really so necessary for her because, thankfully, she and Scott felt, well, we love this child, in their former identity. Of course, we'll love them in their continuing identity. And Jen at PFLAG said that sometimes she would hear a parent say, oh, I just don't know what to do with my child. This is just a terrible thing that they're changing their sexual identity. And Jen said, they're still human. They're still your child. They're still worthy of love. It's okay. It's okay. So she wanted to be supportive of other parents who were struggling with it. And I remember also her telling me of Carter coming home one time being worried about a classmate who was very, very depressed, and Carter is their younger child. Carter identifies as gay. Kate, like her cousin, was transforming from changing sex. Carter in junior high comes home and tells his mother, and they're dwelling in Washington, that he's really worried about his friend who seems so depressed, and that the friend's mother is very negative about it. And Jen says, well, we'll get in the car and we'll go visit that mother. So, she's tried to do very helpful things. And I've just been so thankful that our families, have been accepting. And that includes Tim's, who are Mennonite heritage, though they not on the most conservative side of the Mennonite grouping. Those grandparents are wonderful. And out in Arizona, Jen was anxious. She and Scott were back here. It was summertime. And they were deciding, okay, it was time to tell her parents of Jake, their oldest, changing identity to female. And she got off the phone. Instead of looking all worried, as happy, she said, "Oh, my dad, who's pretty, pretty conservative, said, oh, well, still my grandchild, and I still love her. In fact, sometimes it's much easier to love your grandchildren than it is to love your children." So we got some laughs out of it, as well as some groans. And, yeah. And they have each, you know, gone on to find their ways, because Torian, that's Tim and Andrea's youngest, who's, I think she's about 23 now, graduated again with excellent grades from college, although she had some times that she had to kind of restart because of some health issues that weren't related to sexual identity. But Torian, now as a young man, worked with the Manzoni Center in Philadelphia, which really specializes in working with persons of her age and so on, is doing well. And out in Arizona, Kate has graduated. She amazingly, as a female, even stayed in her mining major at University of Arizona of Tucson, and she graduated wearing her miner's helmet, as did the other eight people in the mining major. And they decorate their helmets instead of wearing mortar bores. They put ribbons and funny stuff on them. And so this very tall young woman, 6'1 or 2, is a mining major, and she's going to specialize in mining safety. Now, her younger brother, Carter, who's gay, Carter is a mining major also, but he's majoring in mining rescue, so that if Kate's safety plan doesn't work out, he'll come in with his team.
They've got it both covered.
Right? And Kate,
so the wedding's coming up.
Kate will be getting married on March 11th to a fine person named Wren. That's his first name. And Wren and Kate met in their freshman year at University of Arizona, Tucson. And the friendship has grown so much that they're ready to take this step with it now.
Well, when I got to meet Scott, when we took the church to Arizona to check out the border and to learn a little bit about what he does with Homeland Security, I said, "Scott, I'm so impressed and glad, and makes my heart feel good that you are so accepting of your child." And he said, "I have the good fortune of having two wonderful children." And I just thought that was wonderful. So my question for you, Connie, is there someone listening, if there's someone listening, who might have a child or a grandchild who is transitioning as transgender, gay, lesbian, and they're having trouble with it, what would be your word to them?
That you are human, you are loved. People of all parts of the world have these identities, and some groups, persons, have been very accepting. Keep learning and growing. God is love. Jesus taught that steadily and lived it. And there have certainly been other things that we've learned about. It used to be that having cancer was a thing you never told anybody, and that was as recently as the 1970s, and
divorce was another big one.
Divorce, exactly. We still have a way to go on sexual identity.
God is love. What a great way to say it. And but at your age, and I'm not supposed to ask your age,
I'm 82.
82. To have such a open and caring attitude toward your grandchildren, I just want to thank you for being willing to share about them, and I feel the pride that you have toward them. And is there anything else you would like to close with?
I'd like to say that, thankfully, there are a number of groups now that are welcoming to persons have an LGBTQIA identity and to supporters. And among the ones here in Lancaster that I know of course, are PFLAG, and that's Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and that's a national, maybe even international group. There's also Lumina, which that works with persons in poverty, but there's Embrace, which is a group that was established about 1989, and there are several pastors in the community that participate actively with that, and it meets monthly. There's a group called Lidditz's Love, or just many different things.
So many resources here locally, mm-hmm. and this is mm-hmm. whoever's listening, wherever you are, we're really honored to have you, Connie Brown, with us,
thank you.
With your heart and your whole being.
Well, I have been very, very blessed.
So glad you are with us today, and I hope you'll tune in again as we listen to one another.